Welcome, everyone. You're listening to the official Rebuild Podcast with your host, Roosevelt Belton Jr. And in every episode, we seek to highlight deep discussions on community, diversity, equity, and inclusion as they relate to higher education in the urban Metro Detroit area. And in this episode, we are honored to discuss these topics with Dr. Antoine M. Garibaldi, the 25th and current president of University of Detroit Mercy. Dr. Garibaldi, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great, Roosevelt. Thanks so much for having me today.
Very welcome. So we're going to talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, but where I want to start with is your background. So to name a few of your accomplishments, you've earned your PhD in educational psychology from Minnesota and your BA from Howard University in sociology. In addition, you've been a tenured professor, authored 11 books, and served as a principal in Minnesota at one point. For the career you've had, what first got you interested in education?
Well, I'll tell you, education is something that I've always enjoyed. I enjoy the interaction with students. I enjoy seeing young people learn. And in some ways, I would not have originally thought that this is where I would have ended up, because when I was in college as a sociology major, I was actually studying to be a priest. I was in my ninth year in that, started out in high school. One of the things that I did in the summertime and sometimes during the year is I volunteered to teach at a school in Washington, D.C., Holy Comfort of St. Cyprian. And I really enjoyed that very, very much. So when I made the decision during my senior year to leave the seminary, I realized that education was very important to me. And I had several wonderful professors at Howard University, and one of whom happened to have been a professor who had been at the University of Minnesota for his graduate work in educational psychology. I developed a great relationship with him and went on and followed his path to pursue a PhD in education. And not to go into this too long, but in my second year of graduate school, I was asked to be the principal of an Urban League Street Academy in St. Paul, which served students that had primarily been suspended and expelled from school, but needed to get back on track. And I really enjoyed that. And that really influenced me tremendously, in addition to what I had done in the summertime working in programs with Title I. And I just realized that that was going to be my path. So sometimes you fall into things a little accidental, but several of my brothers and sisters, I'm one of nine children, and they were educators as well. And so I just found out I loved it and continued on with that.
So speaking of, you know, your background with serving students, as president of Detroit Mercy, the university, along with Wayne State, Wayne County Community College, Henry Ford College, and Mary Grove, received a 2014 NIH grant to fund what would eventually become the Rebuild Initiative. As someone who has served as president at several institutions, what does DEI in higher education mean to you?
Well, diversity, equity, inclusion is so important to all of us. I'm fortunate to have had the opportunity to get an education just like most of my brothers and sisters. And my own father had a college education for just a year and a half. He didn't have the money to continue on. And frankly, that was a story I didn't learn until I was a little bit older, because my dad was just, you know, very low key about it. And he did a number of different jobs as a longshoreman, Pullman porter, you know, and even a janitor. And so I recognized that it was extremely important at that time for us to get an education. And that's the same message I've taken to the institutions that I've gone and worked at: Xavier University of Louisiana in New Orleans, Howard University, Gannon University, and also University of Detroit Mercy. And one of the things that signals the importance of education is the fact that more than 30% of our students are first-generation college students, and many of them cannot afford a college education. And so when we talk about diversity, equity, inclusion in higher education circles, it's still a small number at this time of individuals from lots of different non-white backgrounds who are in education. But within 10 to 15 years, the majority of students who are going to be in higher education will be students of color and students who are underrepresented. And I can remember some 20 some odd years ago when a study was first produced and said that by the year 2020 and beyond, the majority of students of color will be the dominating group in higher education. And that has indeed come to pass. So in making sure that we have the kind of students that we need in higher education, we also need the same number of faculty members who are student individuals of color, administrators, people who work in a lot of different occupations and professions. So we really have to make sure that this is much broader than just the students. It's really about the entire university focusing on an issue of importance for our society, which is really a polyglot of different individuals. And so that's why I consider it to be important. So I've had the good fortune of having served at two historically black institutions for over 20 years. And I've been at two predominantly white institutions, both happen to be Catholic. So I have worked with students of very, very different backgrounds. But the defining point in all of this is that all of these individuals are coming from families who did not have the good fortune, or the majority of them, to have a college education. So that's extremely important if you are going to really have a very, very successful and productive life over the next several years.
Speaking of some of those statistics you named, when it comes to students from underrepresented backgrounds, if we zoom in a little bit, what has, or what do you anticipate the impact will be for programs like Rebuild on the city of Detroit and the state in general?
Well, Rebuild Detroit is already making a significant impact, and that's why I really appreciate the fact that you're doing this podcast, because it's probably about 7 years ago that President Wilson and I sat down from Wayne State to talk a little bit about putting this grant together. And we, as the lead institution of it, played a very, very defining role because of the fact that a large number of our students were first-generation college students. And also that we did not have a medical school. We do have a dental school. But in order for us to qualify for this very important grant from the National Institutes of Health, it was because of our populations, both Wayne State University, as well as Wayne County Community College at that time when we began, and then University of Detroit Mercy. So the focus there was on how to increase the numbers of individuals of color and also financially underrepresented students who came from backgrounds that were not focused in the biomedical sciences. You know, our NIH director today, Dr. Francis Collins, he was the one who was the real motivator behind this particular program. And Dr. Collins recognized that when research grant submissions were being submitted, probably less than 1 to 3% of those applicants were individuals of color. And he recognized there was a great need for us to increase that number of biomedical sciences. And if I might digress for a second, I know that Dr. Wilson worked along with him at the NIH. And when I was provost of Howard University 25 years ago, it's hard to believe it's been that long, Dr. Collins was over the Human Genome Institute, and he co-located a program focused on African Americans at Howard University. And so I've had the good pleasure of working with him before and know what his commitment is. So when we look at Rebuild Detroit and we look at the number of students that have graduated from our program, just 21 of them students graduated in this last class, for example, from University of Detroit Mercy, more than 60% of those students are going on to graduate professional programs to advance their studies. Another good 30 to 40% of them are going directly into industries where they can use those biomedical talents. So who benefits? City of Detroit, State of Michigan, this metropolitan area, each of our community colleges, as well as the universities. And it is a field that many people, particularly young people, don't think about today. We all know about the medical sciences and the health professions, and those are extremely important. And we know about biology and chemistry, but when you tell this young person, you know, there's a great need for individuals like you, namely the biomedical sciences, you can see the excitement on their face. So this program, as you know very, very well, provide students not just with an education, but also with those summer research experiences, an opportunity to get into the laboratories, an opportunity to intern with some of the companies that are doing some of the important things that we've been focused on the last year and a half on vaccines. Nobody would have predicted COVID-19 2 years ago, but the individuals who are working in the labs right now are the students and the young people who are going to take us to that next level so that when the next pandemic comes, we will be ready. So that has been extremely important, and why we're really so excited that we were one of the first set of institutions. There were nine other groups of institutions that were selected, but we're just really excited that it was focused here in Detroit.
Speaking of, you know, City of Detroit and the specific opportunities that your university offers, of the institutions that were selected for the NIH grant, Detroit Mercy serves as the lead in managing the grants and providing research opportunities for students. As president of Detroit Mercy, why was your institution a good fit for taking the lead on this grant?
Well, we were a good fit because of the numbers of students that we have who really fit that category of underrepresented students who were financially challenged in order to get an education. So as I said a few minutes ago, so many of our first generation students, more than 30% of our students are first generation college students. And that surprises a lot of people because many people have this perception that if a student goes to a private college, then they must be really well off. Well, that's not the case. The fact of the matter is that institutions like University of Detroit Mercy, Wayne State have been providing for many, many years students with an opportunity education because the institution provides scholarships and other ways in order to get that support. University of Detroit Mercy is a private institution, and so we have to raise our own money for those scholarship opportunities. So we're very, very thankful to many of our alumni. We had a very successful campaign that raised $115 million about 2 years ago. The majority of that money is going directly into scholarships for now and also in the future. And we reset our tuition in 2017 from $41,000 to $28,000 to make that education more affordable. So in retrospect, we had all the right characteristics. And our partner institutions, Wayne County Community College, you know, Macomb Community College, Henry Ford, all of those really fit the kind of characteristics that said, this is an institution, a group of institutions that can take this grant and really utilize it to the best possible way. So those characteristics are extremely important. And then I would also say, you know, our location in the city of Detroit is a main driver. And then also the recognition and some of the relationships that we have already built. So we have a number of academic centers that have been, you know, highly thought of. And so that gives us a leg up on some other institutions that might be in some other areas. So we were glad that we received the first round of grants, and we're happy that we were renewed for the second round. So another 5 years in this program is going to be really tremendous for this region.
So you mentioned the tuition reset, which occurred in 2017. With that step, UDM has made an initiative to address the affordability of higher education for underrepresented students. In terms of diversity, why is equitable access an important step towards DEI for most, if not every, institution?
Well, it's an important dimension, and I'll put on my hat as a previous, not just elementary teacher, but also high school principal, and also a person who trained teachers at Xavier University of Louisiana for 7 years. We have to get into the classrooms and tell our young people, first and foremost, that getting a post-secondary education is extremely important, whether it's a 2-year education or a 4-year education. Those were extremely important. When I came here 10 years ago, one of the first things I did is I looked at what was the population of individuals 24 years of age and older that had a bachelor's degree. Michigan had 18% at that time. It's a very small number, and it's a small number in part because of the fact that the automotive industry and lots of other industrial manufacturers here could hire individuals very, very easily and get a great salary and great benefits from that. So the desire to go to college was not as strong then as it is now. So we need to make sure that all of our young people are educated. And so teachers have a tremendous influence on young people going to college. And if we plant the seed from the elementary years, they're going to take it on to the middle school, senior high school level, and go directly into college. And so our numbers are really still very, very small. We have about 16 million students who are in college across this country. And, you know, of that number, only about about 2.5 million, for example, are students of African-American descent. And when you start adding the other groups, it still is not as large of a number that we should have in college today. So I emphasize all the time that, you know, this is an important time to make sure that young people who are graduating from high school seek some kind of post-secondary education, because it's going to be extremely important with the technology and with the needs. And, you know, while we're emphasizing for this particular program, you know, underrepresented students, financially challenged, you know, that includes students of Caucasian backgrounds as well, too. It's really for everybody. So that's why I'm so excited about our program. Our program is so diverse that students come from very different backgrounds. And some individuals' families came from other countries here many years ago, settled in Detroit, and they're now at a point where their parents want to make sure that they go to college as well, too. So diversity, equity, inclusion really influences all of those areas. And I want to emphasize that we need more of those young people coming out of those programs to come to colleges and universities and to teach at the post-secondary level, as well as we need them as teachers in the elementary and also in the secondary grades, too. So we have to continue to push why education is so important in order to make sure the next generation has the same kind of opportunities that we have had ourselves.
And so taking a look at Rebuild, connecting those points that you made earlier, unlike scholarships, which solely provide financial assistance for college, programs like Rebuild go a step further and include steps like mentoring and career guidance. In addition to scholarships, how can funding programs like Rebuild be an essential step forward for facilitating student success?
You know, one of those components that you mentioned, that's one of those outside classroom experiences, are the summer research experiences that the students have the opportunity for during their as soon as after their freshman, sophomore, and junior, and even senior year. They're also getting an opportunity to be exposed to companies that see their talent and also are very, very interested in them. And then the thrill of being able to do a research project with a faculty member and also be able to be a co-author on a publication. I mean, you know, for whether you're in academia or not, you're on top of the world when you see your name in print. I mean, I know that from my experiences with my first year when I was in graduate school. That is just absolutely tremendous. And you see a whole another side of what it takes in order to be a scholar and also to be an expert in a particular field. So I know our students treasure that. I try to attend as many of the research expos that they do, where they try to describe the research that they've done. And this is not just for Rebuild Detroit, but also for some of our biology and chemistry. I mean, I have to go back and look at my own textbooks to see whether or not I can even understand some of this stuff. But they're so far advanced. You can just see their beam when they begin to talk about that. And so it's really getting students excited about doing this kind of research and realize how much they can improve society as a result of that. And I would just add to this, too, the University of Detroit and University of Detroit Mercy are very, very proud of the fact that for over 100 years, it's about 110 years now, we have one of the oldest continuing operating program that is a co-op program, cooperative education. That's really what drove a lot of individuals to University of Detroit back around the turn of the century, when we were just starting a college of engineering and science. It was the co-op experiences where students could go to school for a semester, then work with a company or an industry, and then come back to school. Well, they made some money too, and that was very, very important. But they also had the opportunity to really take what they learned in the classroom, apply it to a work setting, and just really pursue great fields, you know, in science and so many other different disciplines. So in many ways, I look at Rebuild Detroit as an extension of our cooperative education program, because students are getting the opportunity to do that, and they do not have to worry about their scholarship. You know, they're really getting a tuition-free education because of the resources of the federal grant, plus other sources that we find in order to support them as a university.
So just wrapping up, Dr. Garibaldi, the current pandemic remains a challenge for most, if not every institution. Despite this challenge, your leadership, along with the Detroit Mercy community, ensure that your students receive and are continue to receive a quality education. How would you like to remember the past year as Detroit Mercy and other colleges are slowly returning to normal operations?
Well, I characterize it in a couple of words, and those two words would be resilience and persistence. Initially, back in March of 2019, I saw students being very uncomfortable with the fact that they were now going to be experiencing virtual learning. But it took about a month for most of them to get over it and say, you know, I'm not losing a semester. I'm actually continuing my education. And when they went to summer school in higher numbers than usual, that said to me that they were not going to let the pandemic slow them down or stop their education. And what the university was able to do in terms of our faculty and our staff, and the sacrifices that all of us made in order to keep that going, has been tremendous. These are the kinds of things that you can't plan for. They're not written in a textbook, but the way that the university community came together in order to make this work was just extremely important. So, you know, I'm disappointed that we couldn't have the kind of graduations that we would have liked for these students, but they'll be talking to their children and their grandchildren about what they experience. And if they encounter anything similar to that, I can just see them now saying, get over it. You know, we handled it and we took it on the chin, but resilience and persistence best characterize what we have experienced over these last 17 months.
Dr. Antoine M. Garibaldi, thank you so much for your leadership as well as your presence. Hopefully look forward to having you back on again.
Thanks so much, Roosevelt. I look forward to doing it.